Hello, Malik. May welcome again to KABU.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be back with you. You do an important show.
Malik Meir is a longtime black rights and revolutionary socialist and labor activist. Made his living as an aviation mechanic when he industrialized after college with thousands of other young people, industrializing in an effort to organize working people towards a fighting union in that plant, and ultimately a democratic country run by the producers. Everything then seemed possible in the 60s and 70s, and it's also possible now. In addition, he began writing. He's written hundreds of articles and co-written the books, The Assassination of Malcolm X, Angola, The Hidden History of Washington's War, and he contributed a chapter to the book, The National Black Independent Political Party, An Important Step Forward for Blacks and Other American Workers. He recently wrote an article titled Black Workers Sue Tesla Over Systemic Racism. Those workers were in Tesla's Fremont, California, electric car plant. Fremont is southwest of San Francisco. At the end of that article on racism and on Tesla and on Elon Musk and worker fight back, you suggested that this could be a prelude to a UAW, that's the United Auto Workers, of them putting forces into assisting the Fremont workers to organize in the auto workers union, that coming possible struggle over unionization. It ends the interview. First, though, Maya, tell us about the current struggle. What are blacks fed up with? How has Tesla handled complaints? How did blacks, also others in the plant, the radicals, how did they challenge the Tesla?
Well, I think it's important to recognize that this particular plant in Fremont has a long history of unionism and workers resisting the employers. It was originally for decades a General Motors plant, and then it became a joint venture with Toyota, GM, and Toyota. And the UAW was the union inside the plants. When the auto crisis hit in 20 years ago, GM decided to pull out, and then eventually the plant was bought by Tesla, and it was bought on the basis that it would be non-union. So most of the workers who had been used to a union were no longer employed. But the consciousness, it wasn't gone, because in the Bay Area, there's a higher pro-union consciousness than a lot of places. So the Tesla workers who got, people got hired were, you know, had some consciousness about labor, even if they weren't unionized. So they've always wanted, many of them have always wanted to unionize, but because of Elon Musk and the management who was hostile to labor unions, I mean, extremely hostile, that wasn't possible, even though the UAW had tried to begin campaigns in the past. The point I was trying to make in the article was that in light of these lawsuits by black workers who face extreme racism at the plant, filing legal action with the EEOC federally and then with the California same body, Fair Employment and Housing, it showed the potential to bring back a union. So that's the context. And the workers there, like everywhere else, you know, we're in a high-cost area in California. So if you're making an average of, say, $18 to $20 an hour, which is what production workers start out at Tesla, you know, you're talking $40,000, $42,000. In comparison, San Jose, San Francisco, most of the Bay Area, household income, you need to even rent an apartment, a decent apartment, you need at least $130,000 to $150,000 a year. So they were, you know, unless you had your both partners working full-time and making overtime, you couldn't even afford to not just not buy a home, but even to get a decent apartment. So that's some of the pressure. And the workers who got the most discrimination, of course, black and Latino. So Musk, who comes from South Africa originally, understood that, and he would use that tactic even in his plan.
Give us an example of what they've done. Musk was once approached by a black worker when he was in the plant, and he was told that there's a lot of racism, and we tried to get some management response, but there hasn't been one. Musk's reply was, toughen up.
But that doesn't apply to everyone, because his attitude is basically, it's on you as the individual to deal with any issues. It's not a problem of race or racism or sexism. It's you, the individual. That's his attitude. And Elon Musk, and this is not just at Tesla, it's at his other company like SpaceX, he expects the workers to work, you know, whatever is necessary to get the job done, 60, 70 hours a week, whatever. That's his attitude. But he also assumes that the minority workers are not the best at doing the job. So he, while he says it's an individual merit, he assumes that the black workers will not be best suited for certain jobs, and he will blame them for any problems they have. So people, you know, who raise complaints, as I think I indicated in the article, they can face disciplinary action. There's no one to go to, and then you get fired and so on. And he tries to pit the blacks against the Latinos too, or the, in different racial groups. That's part of his method as well. And I personally believe, I mean, I don't have proof, but I think by all indicators, it comes from his background as a South African white guy who was raised in apartheid South Africa, as before apartheid was overturned, which was then he had already left the country. Apartheid was formally overthrown in 1990. He left the country in 89 because he didn't want to go into the military. So his entire young life was in a system based on divisions between whites and all the other racial groups.
Yeah,
the white.
Yeah, he may think that they're doing a favor hiring any blacks.
Yes.
And they put blacks, I mean, one of the things that they've done, there's an area of the Fremont plant, it's dirty, it's in winter, very, very cold, it's the hardest work, it's called the plantation, and it's just full of blacks. There's a few other groups there, and it's the hardest work and most physically draining. And it reminds me like of the earliest industrialization of the United States, where the bosses used to put Italians in one, blacks weren't even hired, of course, Italians in one area of the factory and Swedes in the other. And they, and then what they would do is gin up sort of racist stuff about each of them to keep them fighting amongst each other. It was a deliberate way of making sure that they don't organize.
Yes. Well, and it goes further than that, because even if you work hard and you meet all the criteria, very few, you know, management type jobs are available to the black employees. Very few skilled trades jobs are available. So it goes beyond just the basic production, as they call it, the plantation area. Well, what if you wanted to get promoted? It was very hard to get promoted, to take on other positions. And that's, you know, the way it used to be in all industries. That only changed after the civil rights movement began to change the laws. I mean, I remember in the airline industry, you know, you didn't have your first black pilots until the 70s. There were pilots even in Vietnam in the 60s, but they couldn't get a pilot job at the big airlines. Why was that? Pure racism. Musk did the same thing in these plants. Who were the engineers? Who got the different position? You know, he would hire some, obviously, not the same as the pre-civil rights era, but it was very limited. So that was part of the ongoing discrimination. So anyhow, that, but his mindset, I wanted to emphasize, is not just, he's just like any other boss. All capitalist bosses function that way toward the workforce. They don't care about equality and merit. But he was more extreme because I think he had a purely apartheid-type racist mentality toward his workers. And he implemented it. As you said, dirtiest and hardest jobs were the blacks.
Yeah. The you know, the fish fish rot from the head. And his views on everything, including race and unions and their hiring practices, as in some ways they are, for sure, they're not part of the diversity and inclusion effort. Anyway, the agencies, you know, the Equal Employment Occupation agencies, the discrimination fighters in government, the EEOC and its cognate in California, they do have a lot of powers. And they can demand back pay, future pay, rehiring, promotion, policy changes, training. And then they have some, or even big money comes in, like damages for emotional distress and attorney's fees and costs, legal costs. They have a lot of power. But my sense is, and we talked earlier, they don't use it.
No.
Why is that? What, these agencies are in a vice?
First of all, the people in these agencies who really would like to do that are also many times have their hands tied behind their back. Because the agency, their bosses in the government, whether it's the Democratic Party run government or Republicans are very anti-labor, so you don't even expect anything. But they're concerned about what the employers want to do. So while they may tell them they will do a fine, and most companies are willing to pay the fine, they don't like it. But if they don't have to admit guilt, and that's a big part of settlements. If you don't have to admit guilt, but you agree that if something was done, they should have been compensated, and you pay a compensation, and you promise to improve things in the future, that's what these agencies tend to do. They will rarely ever force the companies to change the practices immediately, and rarely do they want to force people to be hired back. Okay, these are class action suits, which are different. If it was just an individual, they may bring the person back. Class action means the whole group. It could be 1,000 people, could be 500, it could be 4,000 over the years. The first EEOC complaint was in 2015 as a class action. So you could be talking thousands of people. They're not going to do that. They're not going to force any employer to rehire a lot of people. If it's one individual or two or three, they may. Generally, they seek to make a compromise. And I say this not just because of this case. I say this from my own experience in the airline industry where I was a union representative. You always ran into that problem. How far were they willing to go? And they basically were told you got to make a deal with the company. And then you left it up to the employees involved in the suit. So they have what I call self-limitations, self-imposed limitations on how far they're willing to go. It can happen,
yeah,
but it's hard because what they really should be doing is really paying a heavy penalty, these companies, but they try to limit it. So government agencies rarely will go as far as they should.
Yeah, that's true of all of them. And in fact, looked at from another perspective, those agencies are a channel into which people are asked to channel their anger
yes,
and dissipate it instead of, in fact, wanting to, you know, unionizing and fighting back in that way in a, you know, sort of a massive revolt. People are asked to sort of bring their individual cases and then get frustrated in long delays. Companies always do that unless they're forced to.
And in most cases that I even mentioned that where you win something, it's where you have unions existing. They have more clout. If you don't have unions existing, then you're really dependent on the system and the lawyers you can hire to carry out the case. You know, you don't have as much clout if you don't have a bargaining agent and they're fighting for you. So even that, the best victories tend to be where you have unions carrying out these kind of cases, but most unions don't want to be in a prolonged battle either on issues of race and racism. They see it as, okay, it's not a real, you know, not an economic issue and a narrowly defined. So even in the unions, they don't like these race-linked issues.
Yeah, in the end of your article, Black Workers Sue Tesla Over Systematic Racism, you point out, I quote, "The suit is important for Tesla's black victims. It also opens the door to a future union drive based on the unity of black, brown, and white workers." Yeah, there's a lot of talk of that. What do you make of the talk? I mean, I don't think UAW has officially announced that they're going to try and add to the organizing drive that some Tesla workers are pursuing. What do you make of the...
After the UAW won with the big three with their strike a few months ago, Sean Fain, the president, said he wants to organize not only at the major auto companies, he wants to make that includes Tesla. He's actually said that. So I know they have a new organizing committee in the UAW headquarters, which is in Detroit. It says they're going to provide them help. Now, I don't know what that means, provide them help. But I know that's the official position. And in light of the fact that the UAW did make some major gains in that strike, because they did strike, I think it gives people more confidence. Now, Elon Musk has already said he's not going to have that happen. We'll see. It would be a real battle. To force Tesla to unionize would be a big victory because he's one of the most anti-labor employers in the country. The Japanese and the European makers, most of those owners came here because they were non-union, but they're used to unions in their home countries. So they're not like unaware of unions and their role. Tesla has never had a union. In fact, not one of Elon Musk's companies have ever had a union. So he's like the old, go back to the days of Henry Ford before the union came in. He's like those kind of bosses. I will never let them in. And he would fight them. And that's the stance he takes. I mean, in Sweden recently, they just, the whole workforce is unionized, and he was willing to take a strike and shut down his facility in Sweden because they wanted to recognize the union. So he's rich enough that he could consider doing that. But I think he makes too much money off his Tesla cars, which is the only main factory he has, is in Fremont, that he wouldn't do it. So I, you know, wouldn't surprise me if he tries to build a plant in Texas, which is where he's moved the company.
Yeah.
The union side, I think, is real. I mean, I think the new organizing committee that they're trying to set up, which has to be secret at this stage because they would get fired, I think it's real. I mean, I think it's a real thing. You know, when I've seen him talk about this, his main argument is that he pays people well, which he doesn't. I just told you the average production worker probably makes $40,000, which is like $20 an hour. And he always says people become rich because I give them stock, which I don't have proof of that. But he has a stock option plan. A lot of employers call it stock ownership, employee stock ownership. So supposedly people get some shares of stock, Tesla stock, if they make it through 4 years.
They have to buy it, though. They have to buy it.
Well, it's not clear. They have that in their 401k, but they also give them what they supposedly give you, grants. But it's not much, because I've checked different Tesla, you know, blog sites. You know, people have to write anonymously. You don't get much. It'd be better if you had your own, you know, much higher wage. But that's part of what they do. They give compensation, which mainly goes to management, by the way, those kind of plants. It mainly goes to management to buy their loyalty. But I'm talking about the production workers. If they get 5 or 10 shares of stock a year, I would be surprised. It would be a real battle.
Yeah. His workers think that they have another leg up in working at Tesla because they're part of the electronics revolution, as if any of the production workers are ever going to be hired into some kind of technical job. Their jobs are going to remain at the bottom of the barrel. And unless they, in fact, organize and demand their right to a living wage, they're not going anywhere. The colleges are full of now young people studying electronics and computers and all the rest of the stuff who are very interested in those, all the white-collar jobs within those industries. And the average worker there is...
Well, they're not going to train you. They're not going to train you. I mean, the main demand of the labor movement has always been you should have a right to be able to move up and get training.
Yeah.
And they're not going to do that.
Yeah. No. And indeed, they're on the assembly lines, right?
Basically.
Somewhat humanized assembly lines, not quite as bad as the GM in the early days, but they're still assembly lines.
Yeah.
What you're learning how to do is turn bolts and attach computer mechanisms in the car. It's nothing like anything that people can't learn in a day or two.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was good talking to you, Malik.
Yeah. This could be in a very important labor battle if it gets to that stage for the whole country. I do believe that, because you're taking on the richest guy in the world. You're taking on the whole concept of the new industry, which is EVs. To all the big companies are, you know, organizing plants, and you have a large workforce that if it could force into a union plant, it would set important standards for the whole industry. So it's more than just organizing an unorganized plant. I think it's got broader significance. That's why it's important that if it reaches the stage of a real battle, people should watch it and support it.
Yeah. Malik Mia, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thanks a lot, Bill. I'm glad to be on this show. I think it serves a very important purpose, getting people to see things from not just a working class point of view, but from a socialist point of view on the issues of race and class. And I think this kind of show is extremely important to be listened to each week.
Well, thank you, Mia, for those kind words.
Take care.
Yeah.